Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Doug Gillard, whose new album, Parallel Stride, is out April 24th via the Dromedary label. The album was recorded in the New York City area by co-producer Tom Bujor at Nuthouse Recording and Travis Harrison at Serious Business Recording. Gillard has served as a key member of Guided by Voices, Not a Surf, Cobra Verde, and others in addition to his solo output. We discussed the writing and recording of this new album, Gillard's love of 60s singles and rock music, some of his musical heroes, as well as his first musical impulses. That's Doug Gillard on Into Music coming up now. I kind of assume that you do a lot of writing and then kind of boil things down. Is that kind of the case?
I think so. I kind of ramped it up in order to finish the record. I don't have a stockpile of composed songs to draw from. It's sort of on an as needed basis, I guess. But, you know, I have lots of ideas floating around and snippets of things here and there. But yeah, I can't draw on a completed song necessarily. You know, there might be one or two laying around, but usually I just kind of focus on a batch at a time, you know.
When did this record kind of come into view that you knew you were going to make it?
Maybe a year or two ago, I set my sights on actually finishing things for an album. And they'd slowly been sort of building up. During the pandemic, there was a compilation that needed a song here and there. So I would do those, and those were done. I had worked on a song with Tom some years ago that was something I never released or put on anything. I think there was another one of those as well. Right when the pandemic started, I was at Tom's working on maybe three or four other songs, slowly chipping away. And then last year, I decided to really finish it and wrote some others and concentrated on filling them out, playing everything, you know, getting the mixed vocals. So with an eye towards this would probably be another album.
I wanted to ask you about a few of the songs specifically. And Faces Smiles, of course, kicks everything off. And that seems to me like such a great opener. Was that always kind of in the lead slot to start the album?
No, the sequencing didn't come till everything was done, but I just kind of took stock of everything and I think, well, that's a pretty good opening riff, so maybe that should start off the kick off the album. That's all the thought I gave to it, to tell you the truth.
We used to have Parallel Stride, which I love the guitar solo in that kicks in at about, I don't know, about minute 46. It's like so unbridled
thanks.
Yeah. Was that improvised?
It was. That was a case where it probably took us about 40 minutes to get that. You know, it's not comped together or anything. I think I played it all in one go, but I was standing in Tom's control room at, you know, Nuthouse Recording there, trying different pedals, and I was using Tom has this 59 Les Paul gold top. I think it's 59 reissue. Maybe it's authentically 59, I don't know, but with P90s, and it had the right sound. So I just kind of tried different passes, and the solo kept evolving. So I just, you know, we arrived at that one, I guess. But I did it, I did it on the day. I didn't really compose it beforehand.
In some ways, the album to me, it hangs together very well, but it also feels to a degree almost like a singles collection.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that wasn't by design, but I like that description. That means you think that things, almost everything could be a single. So that's a compliment. I like really diverse records and things that sound like they're from different sessions, and not just, but you know, homogeneous, homogeneous, whatever the term is, session where everything sort of has the same sound. When things sound a little different, the first Pretenders record was like that. Some of Todd Rundgren's mid-70s things were like that. Yeah, I really didn't go into this record with any theme in mind or any kind of cohesive plan.
I also love the fact that you know how to do a fade. I hear people complain about fades on records, and I'm
Really?
like, yeah, I'm a fan, but they got to be
Yeah.
done right. And you get the I don't know, somehow you get those spots right where it's like, okay, that's it. We're coming down.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. Some of that is also Tom's expertise in as an engineer, but I think I told him where to fade maybe or how long it should be. Sometimes you want one of those 60s fades where it's going and going, and then all of a sudden just kind of drops down really, like very quickly. Like, okay, yeah, it's time to end it. But I like fades. There's nothing wrong with a fade. What songs on this record fade out? I know that Until I See You Again does. That has a fade. Maybe Los Alamos.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm looking at the list. But yeah, I've always dug a good fade. Someone said that once that every Police song fades out. I don't know. Every song by the Police, Nothing Ends Cold. I think that's pretty accurate.
Wow.
But it's not lazy to have a song fade out, and not everything has to have an ending written for it, you know? Yeah, I like that. I think I had a song on Parade On called Angel X that fades. And Until I See You Again was going to just fade. It was just the strummy guitar, saxophones and stuff just kind of fading out. And Tom said, you know, why don't you come up with a guitar line to put there, like a lead type of line during the fade. I'm like, really? Okay. And so I did. Originally, there wasn't going to be anything there except just, the rest of the song. But I think that's a good idea because Tom remembered that I was known as a guitar player. So I'm grateful that he had that idea.
Well, another tune that I did want to ask about, and I do want to swing back to the guitar playing, but Until I See You Again, which I really love those kind of like Buddy Holly gallop kind of tunes. And that's very much how that felt to me, you know?
That one was supposed to sort of have the feel of a quicker sort of Phil Spector production. You know, not exactly wall of sound, but that was the sort of feel I had in mind for that song. And to get the sort of clicky castanet sound, I had Ray Koubian play. He played on like a wooden TV tray with sticks and, just sort of trying to capture that. I think he also did like a rolling floor tom track as well. And I think he or I put in the sort of floor tom that sounds sort of almost like a timpani in spots, just for accents on that one. But yeah, we kind of really wanted that early 60s Spector-esque sort of thing for that.
Yeah, maybe too, that's where some of that idea I have about singles comes in because that was such a singles heavy time.
I grew up on AM radio until I was, 9 or 10 or so. That would be the early 70s. Where I lived in Ohio, we had as the crow flies across Lake Erie, the station we picked up was CKLW from Windsor, Detroit. So they played tons of Motown. It really was whatever was on the charts then too. Lots of glam, sort of the more bubblegum and glam rock sort of ends of things that were on the charts, as well as sort of whatever soft rock singer songwriter was in the singles charts, the Raspberries, and like I said, Motown and other soul that was happening. And so I think all that still goes into the way I and probably lots of people from my generation think about songs.
Yeah, I wondered about that with the kind of concise nature because it's like I don't feel ever like, oh man, he's gonna go back to the course again. It's like you get in and you make that statement and then you're out,
Well, I've had to evolve and remind myself not to repeat too many things and have too long of an intro just with the chord pattern, this and that. Because I used to do that for sure. I had a band in the 90s, and I listen to some of that stuff now, and I'm thinking I could have trimmed some of that off there. You know, I mean, it's okay to be indulgent too sometimes.
That's why I love my Yes albums.
Yeah.
It's like 22 minutes aside, one piece. All right, let's go. But that radio station you mentioned, I think I heard Marshall Crenshaw mention that once too, that was something that he picked up in Detroit, yeah, that was like really inspiring in terms of their scope of what they played and everything.
Yeah. Is he originally Detroit? I think so. Yeah. He lives upstate now, upstate New York here near Kingston. But yeah, I've always really liked Marshall Crenshaw, especially there's this album called Mary Jean and Nine Others that I got at the time when it came out in 87. And it's just him and the trio with, you know, Graham Mabey on bass and his brother on drums, produced by Don Dixon. And the songs are really great. And it's sort of an overlooked record in his catalog, but it came right after Downtown. He had that album. And it's called Mary Jean and Nine Others. And I still think that's some of his best songwriting on that record, really.
Yeah, I'm surprised sometimes I'll see him credited on albums playing lead, and I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I think he's on a couple of Freddie Johnson records. He might be on a Don Dixon album that I have playing lead, you know, too. And I was like, oh, wow, he's got it.
Yeah, he knows. He definitely knows what he's doing.
I also want to ask about New Vista, because the acoustic stuff, there are, I think, some players who move between acoustic and electric pretty well. How do you feel about like your acoustic playing?
I don't do enough of it. I really like rock songs that are just acoustic with a driving beat and bass too. I used to use nylon string a lot as a strummy rhythm device. I don't really think I have that on this record, but back in the late 90s, I was doing a lot of four track recording where I would double the nylon string strumming the chords. And I would utilize that four-track thing with you record with the DBX on, and you play it back or mix it with it off. So you get that sort of hissy and very compressed sound. And I did that on the record. I did a lot of that on the record I did with Bob Pollard on his own label called Speak Kindly of Your Volunteer Fire Department. And right around that time, I've done it a few times since, but I really like sort of a rock and acoustic song. And, you know, I like just non-drum acoustic songs as well, finger picking, whatever. I don't do enough of it, I guess. But yeah, that one is just a steel string acoustic with a capo. I forget what fret, third, I don't know. It definitely has electric elements that come in solo here and there. Yeah, that was one that's been completed for a while. I did that at Tom's just as a one-off and didn't know what I was going to do with it back 2000. I don't know, 15 or 16 or something.
So it's had a life.
A life of just sitting around, yeah. not being put on anything, so. But I've always liked it, so wanted to put that on the record.
And lastly, you know, we talked a little bit about having something different, and I think She Showed Me the Earth. That one closes out, and that one really does stand out. I feel like the tempo's different. The mood is vastly different than the rest.
That one was done for a friend's radio show. I think it's a podcast/radio show, but Brian Musikoff was a friend that had a regular show and asked his musician friends to send him songs that had to do with the earth. So it was a theme. I forget why he had that theme. It was called Back to Earth or something. And I don't know if it was Earth Day. I think it was around that time. It was around Earth Day a few years ago. But for some reason, that was his theme. So I just wrote that really quickly with that in mind. And I think that's why some of the lyrics are just stream of consciousness and kind of a little bit silly, a little bit humorous maybe. But I just did that at home with a Apple drummer, the drummer program that they have in Logic and stuff. So that was done. And I figured, I brought it up to Tom and I said, well, do you think we could throw this on the record? What do you think? Could you master this and make it sound a little, you know, like it fits in sonically with everything else? And so we did, found a way. But that one was all on baritone guitar.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use a baritone on, I use it when I can. It's on Canons, and I think that other song on the record, Saving My Life Every Day, there's a little baritone on there, but you can really hear it on Canons. Canons has tons of guitars. I wanted it to have the lows and highs playing the rhythms. And I've used a baritone on lots of Guided by Voices stuff the last 10 years or so.
How did you kind of learn about orchestrating guitars? Was that like through having a four track, or was it, did it come through listening to records and you're like, oh, that's how they're doing that?
You mean as far as how to layer
Yeah.
sort of different registers of guitars, or
Yeah.
I don't know. I think just experience and trial and error. I mean, I always grew up hearing guitar harmonies too. You know, of course, there's Brian May in Boston and all that stuff. But also, there was the guy from Pilot. I think he was using guitar harmonies before, at the same time Brian May was. Man, what's his name? Ian Fairbairn. He ended up in Alan Parsons Project too. But Ian Berenson. But if you listen to the solo on It's Magic, that's him. And he did that on lots of other Pilot songs as well. But that was a very sort of concise poppy Scottish band in the mid-70s. But yeah, your question wasn't even about lead guitar or guitar harmonies necessarily. You just meant like sort of even rhythm
Yeah.
and where you find sonic space, I guess, when it's called for. And the idea isn't just to fill up every space. I think it's good to also just maybe just have one rhythm guitar sometimes. Not everything has to be filled out. I guess you go with your gut when you're compiling, composing, and mixing a song.
Yeah, I mean, like my friends, that one to me was had this, it was like this confluence of like some Adrian Belew stuff and then like And Your Bird Can Sing. There's this space around the guitar, but it also, you know, cuts through really beautifully.
Oh, thanks. See that one? I used some chorus effect on the guitar. The solo on that one was one where I've done this a few other times. I think it's maybe three different tracks. I just play a single note so that the note rings out, play the next note on another track, you know. And so that one is just a chromatic scale going down. And I don't know why I thought that that should be the solo, but I just wanted it to be something that didn't make any sense.
Two kind of quick things. Like, my understanding is that you started writing songs pretty young, or at least coming up with musical ideas pretty young.
Yeah. I was always beating on stuff, pots and pans and oatmeal canisters and the Hills Brothers coffee can with the plastic top. Watching TV, watching Archie's and Monkees or whatever musical was on. I was always getting out my sister's and brother's records, scratching them up and playing them on the record player. I guess it was just always sort of musical. And I would go hiking with my dog in the cornfields around. I mean, this would be in the winter when the corn was cut down, but or spring. And just kind of I'd make up songs about animals or whatever. Eventually we had a reel-to-reel tape recorder. I mean, a very, very basic one, very cheap one from JCPenney. And I started just kind of recording those things on these little reel-to-reel tapes. Eventually, I had a guitar that was a Sears. It was kind of a cross between a toy and a real guitar in a way, although it was plastic. And I would just kind of tune it to open tunings, since I didn't know how to form proper chords yet. But between that and the snare drum, I would, make up stuff. It wasn't constant. I was also just being a kid, doing other things, but it was always there.
I ask that because the more I talk to people, there are so many musicians I find out it hit them almost inexplicably, and then they never turned it off. You know, it was like, 'cause some people would. They'd be like, okay, it's time to give that stuff up.
Yeah, it's just something I always wanted to do, I guess. Or it's more like you have these ideas in you and you have to do something with them. Not even so much that it's a yen to get attention or look what I can do. It's more, this kind of is part of me, and I've got to present it.
Based on, you know, what we've talked about in terms of influences and everything, it sounds like you kind of were coming of age when that whole Guitar Hero stuff happened, but you seem to be kind of almost impervious to like the flashy solo stuff.
Well, no, I was definitely influenced by a lot of those things, and have partook in that as well. But yeah, I guess I was influenced by a lot of that stuff. I bought Frampton Comes Alive when it was out, so I was like 11. I mean, those were pop songs as well, but I kind of started playing along to that and kind of trying to play what he was playing. And I realized how melodic it was. His playing was very melodic. He also comes from sort of a half jazz training too, kind of, but it's very melodic. And I thought, wow, I really can dig this. This is really cool. And then the Cars happened, and Elliot Easton was a big hero of mine. He had those very concise, quick, composed solos. Talk about in and out. He gets in and then it's out. It's great. And he goes with the chord changes too. It's not just some blues, you know, pentatonic scale or something like that. So I really liked his style for sure. I mean, there are tons of people I looked up to. I mean, I was already into Townsend and Keith Richards and everything like that. And anything Beatles guitar wise, and, you know, I had Chuck Berry records and kind of knew where things sort of came from. Then right after that, it was like James Honeyman Scott and Dave Gregory from XTC and Andy Partridge, I guess. And then from there, it was just everything else that was post-punk, and I was just kind of taking everything in, like the guy from Early Susie and the Banshees and those players, you know. Early Edge was really great. So yeah, I mean, we could go on and on and on and on and on. But yeah, I definitely like some flashy guitar folks.
Yeah,
I mean, and I did like Queen. I heard the stuff on the radio so much, I didn't really go and buy the records that much. Yeah, all that stuff, the guys from the Suite. I kind of discovered how great Mick Ronson was though, a little after a little retro for me, because I had to go back and really check out those records when I was first going to college, or maybe I was a senior in high school. But I'm realizing I missed out on this whole glam thing, except for what was on the radio, because I was young, pretty young at that time, and just listening to AM radio. We didn't have FM yet. So then around that time, when I was in this band Death of Samantha, we were very post-punk, sort of influenced by things like Dream Syndicate. And I mean, I guess we had our own little sound, you know, and punk and Gun Club and this and that. Eventually I sort of started fashioning myself after sort of a Ronson Bolan kind of thing, and started trying to look like that. I got a Black Les Paul, blah, blah, blah. But I really got into the glam thing for some reason, about 10 years after the fact. But it wasn't sort of the hair metal glam. That hadn't started happening yet. It was just a retro 70s thing.
I guess I just think about the amount of taste and the fact that it's like, it's not all that flash. And then it's like when you really dig into it, it's like, oh my God, you know? So I appreciate that about your playing.
Oh, thanks. I've been accused of not having taste in playing, so I'll take that as well. I mean, sometimes you just kind of go off and get a little indulgent, but such is guitar playing.
You've been listening to a conversation with Doug Gillard. His new album, Parallel Stride, is out April 24th. You can learn more about him at DougGillard.com. And you can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org, and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson.